Calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
To present the Memorial Family Birthplace Baby Love Event, it's Friday, September 15th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Museum of Discovery and Science in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Expectant and new parents can enjoy an evening filled with activities, learn about the latest products for their growing families, exclusive discounts, celebrity photo ops, and chances to win amazing prizes. It's sponsored by Pediatric Associates, loving care 365 days a year. For more information, go to pediatricassociates.com. For tickets, go to theticketmiami.com. 1 hour to go here. Frito here alongside Greg Likens. We'll take you up until 10 o'clock. How would you get rid of the home run sculpture? Reports are that Derek Jeter wants to jettison that thing from Marlins Park. By the way, will they ever get a name sponsor? Will they ever sell those naming rights?
It should. I mean, that's one way to make up the lost revenue, right? I mean, and I know you cited very accurately the fact that they have a very bad television deal. The attendance isn't very good, but yeah, I mean, it's been Marlins Park ever since it was built. Why couldn't they? I mean, every stadium across all the major sports have naming rights deals. The Marlins don't have one.
No, they don't. They can. They never struck a deal. Now, hopefully they will.
How is that possible?
Right? You're dealing with the Marlins?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that just goes to show you. Again, I don't want to continue to like live in the past in the sense that there is this deal in place and we think it's highly, highly, highly likely that there's going to be a new ownership group come October. So with that in mind, I mean, you like to stay positive about the future, but my goodness, I mean, the long list of missteps, mistakes, and just terrible ways they've run this franchise just continues to get longer and longer.
He's Greg Likens. I am Frito. Again, we'll take you up until 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join in, 786-360-0790. We're going to get into some Dolphins talk in just a moment. But first, let's go to headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
And the list of Dolphins players lost to season-ending injuries grew by one after practice today. Adam Gase said the cornerback, Tony Lippett tore his Achilles tendon during yesterday's practice and will miss the 2017 season. This follows season-ending knee injuries suffered by quarterback Ryan Tannehill and rookie linebacker Raekwon McMillan. And several reports have the Dolphins working out former Bengals linebacker Ray Malaluga. Can Giancarlo Stanton keep up his incredible power display? Well, he's already done it as he hit his 44th round tripper of the year off of Madison Bumgarner. It was his 23rd homer in the last 35 games. Now, right now, the Marlins, let me get the score here up on the screen. Right now, they lead the Giants going in, or they're in the bottom of the sixth. 4-3, Marlins struck first. Christian Yelich in the first inning had an RBI double, scoring Stanton. Denard Span put the Giants ahead 2-1 with a two-run shot in the third inning. Bottom half of the frame, Giancarlo Stanton tied it up. His, as I said, 44th homer of the year. JT Realmuto hit a sack fly in the third inning and put the Marlins ahead 3-2, scoring Ozuna. A.J. Ellis, of all people, hit a home run off of Madison Bumgarner, putting the Marlins up 4-2, but the Giants answered with Bumgarner himself having an RBI single. So right now, in the bottom of the sixth inning, the Marlins lead the Giants 4-3. They are going for their fifth straight win. And the NFL Players Association announced today it has appealed the six-game suspension for Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. We want to hear from you fans. How do you feel thus far? How nervous are you with the injuries that have beset the Dolphins, you know, before, as Greg said earlier, the second preseason game? Tannehill, done for the year. Rookie linebacker, the second-round pick over, you know, the second-round pick, Raekwon McMillan, who was going to get time in the middle with Lawrence Timmons on one side and Kiko Alonso on the other. He's gone for the season, a knee injury. Right now, Tony Lippett, who was started 13 games at cornerback last year for the Dolphins, was going to be the third cornerback this year. He is gone for the season, and a whole host of other injuries. Mike Pouncey is being held back, likely to get some playing time here in the preseason because of, you know, hip surgery. There are other guys that are as banged up. Juwan James, a bum shoulder, has kept him from practicing for a few days. Ted Larson signed as a free agent, the starting left guard, at least half the year because of a torn bicep. There are just one injury after another that have killed this team. Do you think that the season is sort of over before it starts? 786-360-0790.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but at the same time, it doesn't matter which team you are in the National Football League. If you lose your starting quarterback before any game is played, preseason or otherwise, I mean, that's a terrible sign for the fortunes of your season, right?
Unless your backup is named Kurt Warner.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the Trent Green, Kurt Warner situation, which we were reminded of that when he had his Hall of Fame induction speech a couple of weekends ago.
I wonder, was Trent Green there?
He was there, and Kurt Warner made a special thank you to him, So which I thought was a really nice touch there. But
thank you for getting hurt.
Well,
if not for you, you know, blowing out your knee, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to read between the lines, that's essentially what it was. But he said it wasn't really that. It was he praised him for his professionalism in that situation. He said, you know, it would have been easy for anybody to be kind of bitter about getting hurt and everything, but you showed me how to be a professional, and you were so supportive and everything. So I thought it was a really nice, classy, touching moment in that speech. A speech that otherwise I wasn't really a fan of, Kurt Warner's, personally.
But Why? I was in Hawaii at the time.
I thought it was too self-involved. He was telling all these stories, and it did not seem natural. It seemed very forced. When you compare his to some of the others, I thought Jason Taylor did a tremendous job.
Yeah, I watched that online.
And was eloquent and, you know, had a message behind it, had meeting. I thought Kurt Warner kind of dropped the ball in terms of his delivery.
I thought LaDainian Tomlinson, I saw part of his, was great.
Yeah, and his, you know, a lot of them seemed genuine, whether they were the best message or not, whether they, you know, every guy is as well-spoken as, say, a Jason Taylor, but if they feel genuine and with real emotion, I mean, Kurt Warner's felt a bit detached, where it was just too scripted. And I know that's weird when they're reading off a teleprompter, but, you know, it just didn't seem as heartfelt as some of the others. Right. At least that was my interpretation. But I did like when he thanked Trent Green, because certainly, I mean, the other side of that story, we all know about, you know, the terrific Kurt Warner going from bagging groceries to becoming, well, then a future Hall of Famer. And then the other side of that is Trent Green and that injury history that he could just not shake. And we saw that with the Dolphins as well.
Let me go off on a tangent for 1 second before we continue here. And there's no way to answer this question. But you just wonder how many guys are out there that if just given the chance, they'd be in the right place at the right time and all the stars would align. I mean, Kurt Warner was in a perfect spot. There's receivers and everything. The greatest show on turf, it was dubbed. And had the arm to make that happen. And it just right place, right time, right offensive coordinator and Mike Martz, the head coach Dick Vermeil, and everything just clicked. But if Trent Green remains healthy, this never happens. And Kurt Warner, who knows where he is today, but he doesn't make all that money and he's never heard from again. Maybe.
Probably, right?
And so you wonder if other guys were somewhere just given just the chance. There are other stories out there. We just might never find out about them.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, heck, not to discredit Kurt Warner, maybe he catches on with a different team and things work out for him. But it's hard to imagine they work out as perfectly as they did, as you just described. But certainly, I think in all sports, there is that looming question because, heck, I mean, look at even the NFL draft process. How many years? It's every single year. It doesn't always have to be the Dolphins. It could be around the National Football League. There are undrafted players who end up making a huge impact and becoming stars or late-round picks. So, you know, the scouting evaluation process is anything but a science. I mean, they have what they think is a process in which they can have the best odds at hitting on these picks, but you just never know. I mean, there are stories every single year of guys who fly under the radar, to your point. But some of those guys don't get the opportunity. So a little of it is luck, like anything in life, right?
Yeah.
But getting back to the Miami Dolphins, I mean, losing your starting quarterback before preseason game number one usually doesn't bode well for you.
No.
The Kurt Warner example aside.
That's an anomaly.
Yeah, so that's not a good sign. Now, I still wonder. I mean, getting Jay Cutler seems like a bit of a coup because of his relationship with Adam Gase, because he's available, and you can bring in a guy so you don't have to rely on Matt Moore. They're going to have to bring in a quarterback either way, but Matt Moore now doesn't have the burden of being the starter for all 16 games, and who knows, you know, if he'd survive those 16 games, he may have injuries as well. But I don't know, Josh. I wasn't feeling great about the season to begin with. We had talked about it before. I felt like because of the schedule, the strength of the schedule, and some logistics of it in terms of the travel and everything, it was going to be difficult for them to try to duplicate the 10 wins from a year ago anyway, even with the full team healthy. But now that you've got all these guys missing so early in the process, knowing that there are likely more injuries to come, it just makes you feel like you're already getting off on a bad foot here. And the season, heck, we haven't even played the second preseason game. So I don't want to be down and out already because, you know, stranger things have happened. But it's hard not to feel like the season's already a little bit doomed. Yeah, and I hope they can overcome a lot of this.
You just wonder if another guy goes down, if the players, the coaches, the staff just, you know, has that, oh, my God, here we go again.
Right.
It just must feel a bit snake bit. Like, why is this happening to us? You know, and some non-contact injuries as well. Besides the injuries to Tannehill, Raekwon McMillan, and now Tony Lippett, you know, the nagging injuries as well, just the little ones where we're keeping guys out of practice, whether it's Mike Pouncey. Well, he came off major hip surgery, but Juwan James, the shoulder. Kenyon Drake now in the concussion protocol. He enters the concussion protocol as Jay Ajayi just emerges from it. They just can't seem to catch a break, and I wonder if this season falls short of expectations, will fans out there, you know, be willing to give, say, a mulligan to this team?
I would imagine so, but who knows, right? I wonder just in general if the fans' outlook and expectations have shifted already. I mean, heck, we took that call last night, I believe, from Ty in the Bronx, and he was saying that 11 wins. I don't care.
Oh, my God.
We got Jay Cutler and everything. And so there are going to be a certain segment of the fan base is going to be eternally optimistic regardless of the circumstances, regardless of what's going on. And I think part of that plays into the fact that people feel confident in Adam Gase's ability as a head coach and as a leader. And he exceeded expectations last year with that group, despite the really, really slow start. They overcame that to make the playoffs, but I don't know. This is going to be difficult. Now, again, they haven't played a game in the regular season yet, Josh, so who knows? I mean, there's no reason for us to all of a sudden write off the season right now by any means.
No.
But if you take a step back and look at this from a very straightforward and unbiased perspective, it's like, man, this isn't off to a good start. I mean, the defense, as you pointed out to start the show, already had all sorts of question marks surrounding it, and you're now losing what would have been a starting linebacker and a guy who started 13 games for you in the secondary last year in McMillan and Lippett. So anyway, it's not off to a good start. Things can change. Maybe they find lightning in a bottle. Maybe, Josh, some of these players that have flew under the radar that we don't even know about or haven't even thought about play well over expectations, and we have some nice surprises this year. But on the surface, on paper right now, not a good start, not to be too repetitive.
786-360-0790, and again, not to be too negative, but we'll be a little bit negative here, is the offensive line. Just you need this group to play together. You need chemistry along the line, I would say, more than any other unit in the game, and you've got an offensive line that's just in complete disarray. Mike Pouncey probably will get into one of the preseason games, whether it's this week or next week, but just a little bit, I'm sure. You've got Laremy Tunsil, who missed a week dealing with a personal matter. You've got Juwan James, whose shoulder has precluded him from training very much. And you've got Ted Larson signed as a left guard, and he's now out for the year. So this unit, which absolutely needs cohesion, is getting anything but that.
Correct. And Larson, they're hoping, will return at some point. But the thing is, I mean, right now then you're working in Anthony Steen as your left guard, and Craig Urbick has been playing center in place of Mike Pouncey when he's out. And Pouncey's not participating in all the snaps in practice by any means, even though he has returned, which is encouraging. But you're right. I mean, that is always one of the, I don't want to say it's a cliche, but one of the storylines every training camp, Miami Dolphins or otherwise, is that the offensive line, can he get it together? It's got to be a cohesive unit. Can they be on the field long enough together to feel like they're ready to go regular season game number one? And all of the different factors that you just cited, Josh, you'd say, no, there's no way. I mean, it's just physically impossible because they haven't been on the field together. Now, there's still two more games, really, to try to get some of this done because they're not going to play in preseason game number four, more than likely.
No.
But I would argue that Mike Pouncey doesn't really need to play in the preseason. He can step onto the field season opener, and I think if anybody can do it, he could be okay. But I do think it's vitally important for Anthony Steen to get work at offensive guard, because last year he was the backup at center to Mike Pouncey and didn't have very good reviews. So can he be the left guard for them? Jermon Bushrod, he's a veteran. He'll be okay. Heck, Juwan James played alongside Jermon Bushrod all of last year. So I don't, the right side of the offensive line, I'm okay with. The left side, I think it's a legitimate question between, you know, Laremy Tunsil making the transition from left guard to left tackle on an NFL level, and then, of course, Anthony Steen, if he is indeed your starter at left guard.
Why do you have doubts? Do you have doubts about Tunsil? I don't. I think he's going back to what he knows is home, and I think he'll do fine there.
I don't have huge doubts. I just think that he could use the playing time at left tackle in the preseason. Not a lot, but he could use it just to get himself situated there on the NFL level. I mean, again, it's a big difference from playing SEC football and being in the National Football League.
It's not often, Greg, that you hear a general manager in sports saying, I bleeped up. I blew it. I'm going to own up to this mistake. I screwed up, and I am responsible for this. But we've got a GM in pro sports that did just that yesterday, and we'll talk about that next on The Ticket.
The Riptide Music Festival, powered by Ford, is December 2nd and 3rd on Fort Lauderdale Beach. Now, Saturday features Cage the Elephant, Weezer, Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness, Portugal the Man, and more. Sunday features Casey and the Sunshine Band, Foreigner's Lou Gramm, Morris Day, and The Time with a tribute to Prince, Loverboy, and more to be announced. Presented by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. By East Coast Public Adjusters, don't settle for less. One with Life Organic Tequila. Please drink responsibly. Tickets are on sale right now, and go to theticketmiami.com. Frito here alongside Greg Likens. We will take you up until 10 o'clock. Now, you don't often hear general managers or almost anybody in sports, Greg, say, boy, I screwed up. But Jason Light, the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, did just that. And I think you earned brownie points with a lot of people. Last year, he traded, and I want to get this right here, he moved up in the draft. He traded a third-round pick and a fourth-rounder to the Chiefs to move up to number 59 overall at the end of the second round to draft Roberto Aguayo from Florida State, the most accurate kicker in NFL history. Drafted him in the second round, moved up to get
NCAA.
Him.
NCAA. Yeah.
Did I say NCAA? What did I say?
NFL history.
NCAA history, excuse me.
Far from it in the NFL.
That's right. And he moved up to get him. Gave up a third and a fourth to draft a kicker that high. And Aguayo from the start was a disaster. I mean, it's a lot of pressure on a 21-year-old kid to come there. I'm sure it's pressure enough because as a kicker, you kind of feel isolated. Fans don't often see practices. They do a little bit in training camp. But when teams practice, the offense is there, sometimes against the defense, sometimes on their own. The offensive defensive units and special teams are in one area. But these special teams guys, like the kicker, the long snapper, and the punter, they all go elsewhere. They're just absolutely segregated from the team. If the team's out on the practice field, these guys are in the bubble. If they're in the bubble, these guys are out on the practice field. They're on their own. They're in their own little cocoon away from the club. And you've got a 21-year-old kicker. Yes, he had all that success in the NCAA. But now, look, we traded up to pick you at an almost unprecedented level. Now, Sebastian Janikowski was picked in the first round, but it was a lot of pressure for him, and he succumbed. For whatever reason, he was just a dumpster fire. That happened last year, 2016, and just a few days ago, Jason Light, the general manager, said, I'm owning up to this. I screwed up, and they released him.
They released him. He was just the fourth kicker drafted in the first two rounds in the last 25 years. So you mentioned Janikowski, who is the 17th overall pick in the first round
by the Raiders
in 2000. Mike Nugent from the Jets was a 47th overall pick in 2005. Jason Hansen, 1992 by the Lions, 56th overall. Jason Hansen, that ended up being a really good pick for them. He had a great career in Detroit. So, yeah, I mean, he comes in with unbelievable expectations. I remember when the pick was made and that move was made, it was like, what on earth are they doing? I mean, just, you don't take a kicker that high in the draft regardless of how good the guy was in college anyway. And this was such a bizarre scenario, one, because that happened, but then two, to give up on him after just one season. But Josh, to take a look back at last Friday night in their first preseason game, he missed an extra point and then missed wide right in a 47-yard field goal attempt. You miss an extra point in the National Football League. I know they moved it back a little bit, but that's not a good sign. He just hit on 71% of his field goal attempts his rookie season. I don't know. This is one of those where I guess you can give credit to Jason Light for owning up to it, but what else is he supposed to do? I mean, he obviously made a mistake. We can all see it. They decide to move on from it. I mean, I don't know. Are you saying that perhaps they should have stuck with him a little longer?
No. I admire when people can say, I screwed up. I'm owning up to this. I made a mistake. And if you realize it's a mistake that's probably not fixable, then take care of it right away. Another example of that. Well, I've got to add a postscript to this, and we'll keep talking about it. But an ironic postscript to all this is when they drafted Aguayo in 2016, the Buccaneers cut their current kicker at the time, Connor Barth, who's now on the Bears. So who picks up Aguayo from waivers from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? The Bears. So here's Connor Barth saying, what do I have to do to get away from this guy? You know, right. he cost me a job in Tampa. Now he may cost me a job here in Chicago.
Oh, Connor Barth is going to be like, this guy again? Oh, my goodness. The crazy thing is Aguayo being that good in college, I think many would say that this may be a psychological thing for him because, you know, he proved in college that physically he was as good as there was in NCAA history, as you pointed out. So this is a strange one for him, Roberto Aguayo, to say the least. But again, whether it's Jason Light or any other general manager in the National Football League, just do yourselves all a favor. Don't draft a kicker that high, okay? I mean, no matter how good you think he is, he's not going to make that big of a difference.
Well, you know what? Another example of admitting they were wrong. Who's the Seattle general manager? Is it John Schneider? What's his last name? It's the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes.
Schneider. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who calls the shots there. If it's Pete Carroll or Schneider, I don't know who has the final say.
Well, yeah. I mean, the GM has the final say, but...
Well,
but
no. I mean, Bill Belichick is not the GM in
name. No, I know, but they bounce things off each other. I mean, I haven't heard anything that... Pete Carroll's the one making the decision. Schneider's the one who usually gets the credit for everything.
Okay, well, back in the 2011 season, heading into the 2012 season, they signed free agent quarterback Matt Flynn. $25 million deal, but the important number was $10 million. They guaranteed him $10 million. And then the following month when the draft happened, or 2 months later, they draft Russell Wilson, number 75 overall. So here's the they gave Flynn $10 million, just upfront guaranteed that's yours no matter what. Wilson gets drafted, and right out of the gate, they realized Wilson is better than Flynn, even though he's drafted, in the third round, 75th overall. Flynn never saw the light of day at all with Seattle. Wilson started from day one, and so you just, almost right after they made that they signed him as a free agent, they realized they screwed up, and they ate $10 million. I give that. Look, yes, they made a costly mistake, but boy, they realized it very quickly, and they just never played Flynn. Yeah, they had to pay him, but they didn't play him. And look what happened as a result of that.
Well, in that case, you know, I'm all for it in terms of, you know, backing up that decision because, heck, third round, they get Russell Wilson, and obviously all the other NFL teams passed up on him and didn't think he had the size and strength measurables that you want an NFL quarterback. And then Wilson came in and, as the story goes, showed not just the leadership of a veteran quarterback, but also the playmaking ability. They're like, hey, we got to build our team around this guy, at least offensively. So I'm with you on that. The kicker one, I'm not giving Jason Light any credit for that, even though he owned up to his mistake. Like, what else is he supposed to do? He looks like an idiot for moving up into the second round and giving up draft pick compensation to take a kicker of all positions. So in both of those scenarios you laid out there, Josh, I would err towards the Seahawks as saying, hey, you moved on. Good job by you. Because you know what? They had Matt Flynn it wasn't just them. It was Dolphins fans. It was all of the markets across the National Football League who were hungry for the idea of Matt Flynn to come and potentially be their quarterback after they saw what he did in Green Bay. So he at least was really in demand. You can understand spending some money there. A kicker in the second round, as we point out statistically, that's almost unprecedented.
This is where Joe Philbin could have actually made a right move behind the scenes because no one knew Matt Flynn on the market better than Joe Philbin.
Right.
Joe Philbin was the offensive coordinator. He designed the offensive game plans. He didn't call the plays, but he designed the game plans. He saw Flynn every day, whether it be on the practice field, in the meeting rooms, in the weight room. He knew Matt Flynn probably as good or better than anybody outside the Packers organization, because they knew, and certainly on par with the Packers organization. I got to figure he told, now maybe the Dolphins and Jeff Ireland weren't willing to spend that much money on Matt Flynn anyway, but I'll give Joe the benefit of the doubt and say, you know what, fellas, they're guaranteeing him $10 million. Don't do that. He isn't worth it.
One of the few things he did well, then, yeah, is what you're saying.
I'm just saying I'll give Joe, I don't know that to be the case, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that it was on his advice that they don't ante up as much money as Seattle did.
The interesting thing about Joe Philbin, if we look at it after the fact, and listen, great guy, great person, but certainly no leader of men, and was kept around for way too long as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. But if you believe the reports, and again, you know, we're not sure exactly where they're coming from, so who knows what exactly transpired. We do know that he had a contentious relationship, at least in the end, with Jeff Ireland before Ireland was let go. But if you believe the reports, he pushed for the team to draft Derek Carr.
I know that. Yeah.
So, you know, as much as we can criticize Joe Philbin, and I still don't think he's fit to be a head coach, he certainly can be a very good assistant coach in the National Football League. He, I think, had a gut feeling there on Derek Carr, who now is, you know, signing this huge contract with the highest paid player, I guess, on for average salary now.
So over $25
million. Yeah, in the NFL. So if that report is true, you have to at least give him some credit for that as well.
And that was just 2 years after Tannehill was drafted. Tannehill was drafted, same draft as Russell Wilson, 67 spots ahead of him at number right. 8 overall. You know, I see this done sometimes, and by the way, Carr went in the second round of the 14 draft. That was a great draft by the Raiders. The 5th overall pick, they picked Khalil Mack, and then they go to the other side of the ball. The second round, I don't remember what exactly pick in the second round, but then they picked Derek Carr.
So can I, real quickly, let me amend something I said earlier, because
I know where you're going to go.
I was making
this.
The comment
Juwan James
about Juwan James Jarvis Landry. I think that's still a terrific duo for your first two picks, but I don't think anything in recent memory is going to top Khalil Mack and Derek Carr. I mean, that is unbelievable.
I will say this. This goes back to the 60s, and I think it was the same draft. But the Chicago Bears, I think in the same draft, drafted Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus, two Hall of Famers, in one draft. Now, and you look to the Steelers, by the way. They had some unbelievable ones. They had like 3-4 Hall of Famers. But you're right. Khalil Mack and Derek Carr, both sides of the ball.
Right.
Phenomenal.
Unbelievable. And both. It's not just their production on the field, but also their leadership in the locker room is unparalleled in terms of two young players coming in and really taking over. And the two have a great respect for each other. I think they're good friends. And so you've got like a spokesperson on either side of the ball in terms of leadership. We have Jack Del Rio's back as well. So it just worked out perfectly for them. Not this past year, but the season before, Khalil Mack was named All-Pro at two different positions.
I don't remember that, really?
Outside linebacker and at defensive end, because he played both. And that's how good he was. So, yeah, I mean, it just goes without saying that they hit a home run on both of those picks.
Now, this is an example years ago, about 20 years ago, of realizing a mistake. I don't remember the money that the Dolphins signed him for as a free agent. But the Dolphins signed Jack Del Rio, a linebacker, as a free agent. And I don't think it broke the bank. But then they drafted a 5th rounder out of Texas Tech, some guy named Zach Thomas. It took one preseason game for Jimmy to realize, this guy's pretty good, this Zach guy, and they cut Del Rio. I'm not sure he ever played again in the league.
I think that was it for him.
And he went into coaching, and of course now is the head coach of the Raiders.
Yeah, and he's been a successful head coach in terms of getting great opportunities in the NFL, so things have worked out fine for him. But it is funny how that worked out, isn't it? You think back on that, and Zach Thomas, productive in college, but he was undersized as well. Yep. Didn't fit the measurables that we were talking about earlier. And you put the game film on, you watch him in the game, and it's like, holy cow, this guy's a difference maker.
Now, we brought up this topic of Jason Light drafting Roberto Aguayo last year and a couple of days ago saying to Monday Morning Quarterback, I own up to the mistake, and he released him. And you were describing how fans must have gone, oh, no, what are you doing? You're giving up a 3rd and 4th rounder to move up to get a kicker for all people in the second round. And it reminded me of a fantasy draft. When you see a guy, now most of these drafts are online. You're not in the same room with these guys, but have you ever had a fantasy draft where some guy just completely goes off the grid and reaches up to a guy that he maybe could have gotten 3 rounds later, and you're just, at that point, you thank God that guy is in your league.
Right.
Go ahead, Grant.
Well, you make sure funny. He's already paid his entrance.
That's right.
Right?
It's funny because we have one of the guys that's in my league. I've been doing the same league for, I think we're going on like 10 years now. So we've been in this league for a while. And this was, I would say, maybe a year or two after Ricky Williams returned from, you know, being suspended for weed and everything, and he came back to the Dolphins. He picked Ricky Williams with the number one overall pick of the draft.
Wow.
We all actually tried to say, like, come on, like, this is a joke. You can't really be serious, because this was a live draft. This wasn't an online draft. And we're actually trying to talk him out of it, and he just insisted, nope, nope, I feel it. He's going to have a monster year this year. So a guy he probably could have gotten fourth, fifth, sixth round, he wound up taking first overall.
I'd send the guy out to say, next time you go out to dinner, it's on me.
Right.
Because we're going to get your money.
somebody buy this guy a drink.
Oh, my God.
To this day, we still rib him about it. Every single draft, it comes up.
Does he admit that he totally screwed up?
He still defends that pick somehow. He's like, you know what? I had a feeling. I had to go with it.
There's a guy who's a host now on another station. I guess you can guess which station. And years ago, I was in his league. It was an in-person draft. And one of the guys in our league didn't do his homework. Just didn't know what he's, you know, you got to do homework when you're doing a fantasy draft. And this guy didn't. And I don't even remember the player we're talking about, but he picked a guy. And the commissioner, who's now a host on the other station, said, okay, you're picking so-and-so. Yep. You're sure about that. Yep. You're positive. That's the guy you want. Yep. All right. Well, he got injured last week. He's out for the season. Good job by you. It just has to make you feel like, oh man, I just totally screwed up.
Well, especially if you're in person with everybody there who will mock you endlessly for it, right? Because that's like half the fun of being in a fantasy football league, is you can talk trash to everybody, right?
I mean, do you type in your trash comments? Because I'll do that sometimes.
Yeah, if you have to do it online, for sure. And which is what I have to do. I was explaining my league last night. Everybody's all across the country now. When the league started, we were all in the same place. We talk trash to each other's faces, but now, yeah, it's all digital in terms of that. But yeah, those are the days where you just thank the Lord that person is in your fantasy draft.
Oh, yeah.
What's also great is when you're doing the live in-person drafts, there's usually drinking involved. And as the draft gets later on and later on, people start getting more and more drunk and the picks start becoming more and more outrageous.
See, if I was doing it in person, like in a bar, like you rent a room in a bar, I would just tell the server, just give me water. Pretend it's vodka, but give me water.
Club soda.
Club soda, exactly right. So, you know, drafts are coming up, and it's just a fantastic time. You can feel so high after a draft, like, oh, man, I did great. At least on paper, I did great. You don't know what's going to unfold, you know, with injuries and everything. And there have been a couple of times, not many, when I just walk out of there feeling my season is done and it hasn't even started. I just totally just bombed in this draft.
Were you right? Like, did it end up?
Yeah. There were a couple of times I felt that. It just, you know, it was a horrible day at the office, so to speak.
Well, that's interesting, because sometimes, I don't think I've ever felt like that, but sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm not sure, right? I don't feel great about it. I don't feel bad, but I'm not sure. And then sometimes those seasons turn out fine. I mean, it seems, though, that the seasons where I feel like the draft went really well, that the team never lives up to those expectations. So I don't know if it's just, you know, a lot of it, I think, is just psychology, right? You're just psyching yourself out one way or the other.
I'm the exact opposite of you. I have felt really good about two drafts. I won both of those leagues.
Wow.
Other than that, I feel good about most of my drafts, but most of my drafts, I feel like at the end of it, it's like, if I have one or two players get hurt, I'm done, and that's usually what happens.
Let me ask quick advice. We got to go to break in a minute, but one guy in our league sent an email to everybody else saying, he wants the person that wins the regular season to get more money than the person that wins the championship. I'm going to send an email completely disagreeing, because he said a 14-week season or 13-week season is a better barometer than 3 weeks when anything can happen. That's the point. Anything can happen in those 3 weeks, and it, you know, be it injuries, whatever. I think the person that wins the title should be given more money than any other person in the league.
Well, I like having a reward for winning the regular season and having the best record. That's fine, but it shouldn't be more than the championship.
No, he's arguing that the championship should be less than the regular season winner. Ridiculous. I think that's completely ass backwards.
Yeah. What the heck are you just going to rewrite the rules to all of fantasy football just for your own selfish reasons?
You can't win a championship and make less than the person that came in second or third.
Well, trust me, I'm going to send out an email saying, you know, no, that's just not going to, happen. You know, earlier in the night, we had Adam Beasley. And Adam Beasley, by the way, will be on with me tomorrow with Barry Jackson. The three of us will be doing 7 to 10 tomorrow. But a lot of insight, a lot of injuries to go over with Adam Beasley. We had a lot of discussions about what's going on with the team as they head into the second preseason game. And we'll play that next right here on The Ticket. Fantasy football players, win your league. Come to The Ticket's third annual Anna Jar and Levine John Clayton Fantasy Football Camp with special guest CBSSports.com's Jamie Eisenberg. It's Saturday night, August 26th. At the Sport of Kings at Gulfstream Park from 6 to 9 p.m., it's free. And win some exclusive one-on-one time with John Clayton Saturday afternoon. Just register now at theticketmiami.com. Anna Jar and Levine Accident Attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Sponsored by East Coast Public Adjusters, by Gun World of South Florida, and by Life Storage. For more details on attending for free, go to theticketmiami.com. That is a great event. It's the third time we've done it. I get so excited to get a chance to pick the brain of John Clayton and Jamie Eisenberg, whom we had on last night. If you're a fantasy football player, this is a must-attend event. And as we said, it's free. Go to our website, theticketmiami.com, for more information. It is a fantastic and very informative event. Speaking of very informative, Adam Beasley, as he blew us off last night. I mean, something about a childbirth class. He's got his priorities screwed.
Yeah,
what's more important?
What kind of priorities?
Oh, my God. His unborn son, Frito Beasley, or, you know, or our show. He joins us right now in the Orion Fuels and Downstairs Convenience Stores guest line. They're truly steps beyond convenient. Boy, you know, your son or our show. My God. You got your priorities messed up. How was birthing class last night?
Don't ever watch the video.
Well, I lived it. I was in the room when my kids were born. So
yeah, I'm staying topside.
Okay. See, you should have come on the show last night.
No, it was good, man. It shows me just about a million other things I need to be petrified about. So it's good.
There you go. Everything will go just fine. I have to ask: is the media healthy? I mean, did anybody get injured watching practice today in the bubble? I just want one time Adam Beasley to come to the podium and say, yeah, everybody's fine and healthy. When's the last time that happened?
We have a group out there that has not suffered a catastrophic injury, I think. Offense, defense, it's amazing the coaches are still standing. you would think that, at some point the Dolphins' luck would turn and they'd find a better way forward, but absolutely not. I mean, today was another gut punch because Tony Lippett's out for the season with a torn Achilles, and Kenyon Drake's out for the foreseeable future with a concussion. It's grim out there, man. I know these GMs build these 90-man rosters, and then there'll be 53 in a couple of weeks to take care of these contingencies. But even the deepest team can't handle the body blows the Dolphins have suffered.
Now. And we're joined by Adam Beasley, the Herald's Dolphins beat writer, our Dolphins insider here at 790 The Ticket. A texter writes in, do you think the training staff is somewhat to blame for these injuries? Now, you know, you had the player, I'm trying to remember his name, Tyler, who was the one that hit Kenyon Drake?
Torrey McTyer.
That was a mistake by a rookie trying to make the team. But the other injuries, it's just football. Now, you can say, you know, Ryan Tannehill, should he have had surgery? Should he not have? Look, they made the decision based on the best medical information they had at the time. You know, Raekwon McMillan didn't get hit too hard. I think that a lot of this is just random, and it's just bad luck that it happened to the Dolphins. How do you view this collective group of injuries?
Yeah, I think you're right, Frito. You look at them individually and decide, you know, Tannehill is in a class all its own because he probably should have had that surgery in December, but I remember you, me, everybody else was saying it was a great thing that he wasn't going to be out for 9 to 12 months and that, hey, look how resilient this guy is. Well, the Dolphins kind of played the odds there and it came up snake eyes, right? I mean, that's the only one where you could even be slightly, questioning their methods. Everything else is just dumb bleeping luck. I mean, they've been really unlucky. You mentioned the McMillan injury. I mean, talk about just absolutely horrendous fortune. He got hit on his first play as a pro, covering a punt, and people are like, well, why was he on special teams? Because he's a rookie second-round pick. That's what they do. He was going to play 30% of the snaps this year on defense, so that to have him active, he had to play special teams. And to play special teams, you need to practice it. And that was Adam Gase's answer. Is like, he's going to be out there week one for us, running down kicks and punts. he has to know what he's doing. So, again, that's totally fair. And the rest of these, what are you going to do about a guy like Tony Lippett jumping up to make a play, and when he lands, the Achilles pops? The argument the Dolphins have made, and I think it's a pretty strong one, is, well, the only things that we can really prevent are these soft muscle injuries, the strains, the pulls, things like that. These minor, you know, muscular injuries that can turn to a 2-3-4 week ordeal. Aside from, what was it, Rashad Jones had a calf, and that happened to him working out his own, they really haven't had too many of those. We've talked at length about Devontae Parker and his hamstrings last year that haven't been an issue this year. No, they're having these awful, catastrophic tears, like, you know, tendons just ripping. And I don't think any amount of preparation is going to do anything about that. It's just really bad luck.
Hey, Bees, with all that in mind, do you get the sense that Adam Gase will adjust anything in practice or his approach to some of the remaining three preseason games, considering how quickly this injury rate has piled up for the team?
Well, he already did, right? He basically canceled practice the last day of training camp. I know some fans were disappointed. Some even didn't get the message that the practice was closed and showed up today because it was the last day of camp. But he wasn't going to risk putting these guys in danger again. He shut it down, had a walkthrough in the bubble, and they were done in an hour and change. So, yeah, he's already kind of, you know, changed direction, changed course from what he's seen. I doubt we'll see a ton of Jay Ajayi this preseason. We already knew we were going to see much of Mike Pouncey. I would be kind of shocked if he plays now on Thursday, considering he didn't participate in today's walkthrough. The week three preseason game seems more likely. But we've talked about this at length with both of you guys. You can't win the Super Bowl in August, but you can lose it. And most teams that lose their starting quarterback before a single snap, their season's doomed. And I guess it speaks to Adam Gase and Mike Tannenbaum and their levels of persuasion, their powers of persuasion, and the money they saved against the salary cap. They could bring in a guy like Jay Cutler, so we're not talking about 2018. But let's be frank, if they didn't bring in Cutler, and Matt Moore is the starter for 16 games, and I know the three of us all have some affinity for Matt Moore, you're probably looking at a 5-11 or 6-10 season just because of what history tells you about them. They're not in that position now, and that gives, at the very least, Dolphins fans something to look forward to in the months to come.
Jay Cutler will probably, I guess he'll start on Thursday, right? I mean, he took first-team reps. How much time do you think he'll get? A couple of series maybe, and then come a week from Thursday in Philadelphia. Do you expect Cutler? Because he needs on-field reps with these guys. You know, they need to work on the timing as much as they can. Will he play in the dress rehearsal through the first half and into the third quarter as the starters will?
Yeah, those are obviously all questions for Adam Gase. I think they're going to look pretty closely at how he does against the Eagles next week in these joint practices. Monday and Tuesday, they're up in Philadelphia practicing against the Eagles. So that'll give them as much of a way to evaluate how far he's come than anything else. But, I mean, he's kind of been rusty. That first practice he had was spectacular. Our jaws were all on the floor. The throws he was making were great. Well, then he came back to earth. What was it, Saturday or Sunday? I can't remember the days run together. He threw two picks in the red zone, including a pick six. Yesterday was better, and then obviously today was just a walkthrough. But he's got a way to go, and he needs the work. So it's a fine line. Do you protect him, put him in that bubble wrap they talk about with Mike Pouncey, and not put him at risk much, and then get to the opener against Tampa Bay, and he's still trying to figure out the offense? I wouldn't want to be Adam Gase right now because those are tough decisions.
Yeah, and Bees, along those lines, with Jay Cutler, I get it. They're paying him $10 million, and you know he's going to be the starter opening the regular season, assuming he's healthy. But I do wonder if the Matt Moore scenario, considering his status and his presence in the locker room and being well-respected and you know his teammates knowing what he can do when he's been out on the field, do you think that was a sensitive issue for Adam Gase to bring in Jay Cutler and just anoint him the starter right away?
Yes, it was absolutely a sensitive issue, and it's one that Jay Cutler understands implicitly. He has gone out of his way to be deferential to not only Matt Moore, but the rest of his team. The very first day he was here, that Tuesday, a week ago today, he got second in line. He put himself behind Matt Moore in all of the reps. He was deferring to Matt Moore, look, you're still a huge part of this team, and you deserve the respect of going first today. Even though everybody knows the reality, you don't spend $10 million on a quarterback to have him be your backup. And if Matt Moore plays this year, something's gone wrong. Either Jay's hurt or he's not playing well. So he's done that. There's a photo circulating on Twitter of him out to dinner with all the wide receivers. That's huge. I mean, I don't understand where this reputation comes from. And I get it. I understand that he hasn't been the most charming guy in the media in years past. And I know he and the coaching staff in Denver didn't get along very well, and that's why he got traded. But I keep looking for evidence of this entitled kind of lazy, whatever you want, whatever the cliche, not tough enough to play, whatever the reputation Cutler had before here, I just don't see it. Now, again, it's easy to be upbeat and a team player and gracious to the media when you're 0-0 and you haven't thrown any real picks in real games and there's no criticism. But I think a combination of things are at play here. One, some of his reputation may not have been deserved. Two, he has a new lease on life now, particularly, being out of the league. I don't think he wanted to retire back in January. I think he was kind of forced to retire. So I think he has a new appreciation of the league. And three, I think Adam Gase has, as funny as it may sound, because we know he can be kind of wild and intense, but I think he has a calming effect on Jay Cutler. I think their two personalities mesh pretty well. And so if he's going to succeed anywhere in his career, and we're obviously on the tail end of it now, it's going to be here with this team, with this coach, and these receivers.
I can just see out to dinner with the receivers, Cutler turning to Landry and say, what do you mean you haven't gotten a deal? I was broadcasting and they gave me $10 million.
Landry have to pay.
That's right. How concerned are you, and we're joined by Adam Beasley here, how concerned are you about the offensive line? You got Mike Pouncey, who hasn't taken any snaps yet and may not for in the preseason. We don't know. We think he will a little bit perhaps in the third game, but we're not sure. Laremy Tunsil missed time a week due to a personal issue. Juwan James has missed practice for a few days, nursing a shoulder injury. Ted Larson's out for at least half the season. There's zero chemistry along the offensive line, perhaps the unit that needs more chemistry than any other on the team.
Yeah, I couldn't put it better than you did right now, Frito. It's a cause for concern, big concern. We saw so little of them. I mean, obviously, Bushrod was the only starter, and the starters were out after three snaps in the first preseason game. They've kind of won some consistency and to see what they can do. I don't know. I could make up an answer and just try to sound smart, but I really don't know what to expect from this offensive line just because we haven't seen it yet. And Tunsil, you mentioned, was out for a while with a personal issue. He's got to be – I know Pouncey's the heart and soul of that offense, but he's got to kind of have to be their best player because you can't count on 16 games of high-level Mike Pouncey at this point in his career because of his injury issues. And there's nobody else on that line that's nearly as talented as Tunsil. So he has to, for this team to be successful – he has to go up in a hurry. Pouncey has to be healthy. Juwan James has to put last year's bad season in the rearview mirror, and they have to make this collection of guards work. Those are a lot of ifs.
Bees, I know you said before that in terms of the injuries that are putting these players out for the season, that we could kind of question the Ryan Tannehill decision, but even that's a bit of a stretch in terms of not having the surgery before. But in regards to Raekwon McMillan, while you can't look ahead and account for the injury that transpired with him, I do think it's worth pointing out that they could have signed a Zach Brown. They could have been more proactive in free agency. Instead, they relied on Koemisi, who we knew was going to get hurt. We didn't know he was going to be out for the season. We knew he was going to get hurt. I think it's fair to second-guess the decision-making at the linebacker position now that we see them with either Mike Hull or Neville Hewitt as it currently stands as their potential starting middle linebacker.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And they're not done. They worked out some linebackers today, it sounds like my colleague Barry Jackson reported. So they're not done, but you're absolutely right. They had the cap space and the interest among the players to come here. I know Zach Brown visited here and would have liked to have signed here. The name that doesn't get thrown around a lot is David Harris. Now, we don't know how much he has left, but I would take a 32, whatever it is, year-old David Harris over what they have now, Mike Hall and Neville Hewitt and the names you mentioned. So, yeah, that's the one area where you can really kind of look at them a little cross-eyed and say, we saw this problem coming down the pike. We knew Koemisi's got a very long history of being hurt, and he's coming off major, major neck injury. You could not have envisioned your you know, your maybe your best rookie getting hurt in the first snap he's ever seen as a pro. But nonetheless, there were options there. They could have walked away from Misi and used some of that money to sign Zach Brown, who didn't cost too much more than Misi would have. There were other avenues they could have taken for sure, Greg. And if the run defense is bad again this year, and if it's the linebacker's fault, that's going to be one place where they're going to have to answer some questions in January.
Bees, thanks very much for taking the time. And tomorrow night you'll be sitting in the chair here with Barry Jackson, be the three of us doing the show from 7 to 10.
You know, Frito, it's been way too long. I haven't seen you in months, it feels
that's
like.
Right, that's right. We'll talk to you later. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, later, fellas.
Thanks. All right, that's going to do it. Our thanks to Adam Beasley for coming on. Adam and Barry Jackson will be my co-host tomorrow night from 7 to 10. Greg Likens, thank you very much. I'll be with you Friday evening from 7 to 10. Grant Skidmore, terrific job by you. Appreciate all the hard work that you did. Coming up next here on 790 The Ticket, ESPN Radio.